PFT Live, NBC Sports Radio, NBCSN, Eagles Hall of Famer Brian Westbrook in studio today. Let's have a little fun now. The whole show should be fun, but this specifically is fun to me when we draft players back and forth. Rookies of the year, either side of the ball, offense or defense, our top five each. Brian Westbrook, you have won the coin toss. There was no coin toss. You get the first pick.
I appreciate having the first pick, Mike. I think when you're talking about rookies of the year, you want an impactful player, a guy that's going to get a lot of touches and that can help his team win. My number one pick, I think it probably should be obvious, but is Dalvin Cook. He's a guy that can catch the ball out of the backfield, so he's an impact there. He's a guy that can run in between the tackles and outside of the tackles. He's an impact there in the run game. He's going to go to a team with Mike Zimmer as a coach that wants to run the football and play defense. He's going to be the replacement for Adrian Peterson, even though he may be splitting some time with Latavius Murray. He's a guy that can be very impactful. And remember, Mike, we're talking about the pass game again. Sam Bradford likes to throw the ball under 10 yards. That's his thing. He wants to make sure that the check down is available. The best thing for a young running back is to get the check down from the quarterback and the confidence of the quarterback. I think Dalvin Cook will be an absolute steal for the Vikings, someone that can be very impactful for them.
I know the Vikings believe they got a first-rounder in Cook who slid to round two, but I'm going to go with the guy who was the first running back off the board, fourth overall. You don't take a guy that high unless you believe he's going to be special and unless you plan to use him. Jaguars running back Leonard Fournette is my pick for Offensive Rookie of the Year, the first guy that I would take. He was one of the best running backs in college football over the past several years, made a big splash early on. He had some injury issues he's got to work through, but if he can be durable at the next level, Leonard Fournette is a guy who can do great things for the Jaguars. And I know the Jaguars have been down in recent years. Their defense is improving. Their passing game has potential. If Blake Bortles can iron out some things he's been trying to iron out for the last 3 years, but never mind that. With Fournette, goes a long way toward ironing them out if you've got 8 and 9 guys in the box trying to stop him. So Fournette is my first round pick. All right, on to round two. Brian, who do you have?
Yeah, I like Fournette an awful lot. I just wonder, when you're facing that 9-man boxes every single week, how well he'll do. But I think that's a great pick. Second round, I'm going to go Corey Davis. I love what the Titans have done. I think Marcus Mariota is a very good quarterback. They're trying to put weapons around him. They have established a running game with their two running backs down there. So now they're trying to find more weapons for Marcus Mariota. When you add Davis, you have a receiver that's very versatile. He's explosive. He can get down the field. And I think one of the best things that he can do, and I played with the receiver that had a great ability to do this, yards after catch. Corey Davis, when he catches that football, it's going to be the yards after the catch is going to make the difference in the NFL. And he was a 4-year starter at Western Michigan. He's a guy that can get it done. Marcus Mariota wants to throw the football. Corey Davis will have that impact because he'll have the opportunities and attempts as far as catching the football.
I don't disagree with any of that, but if he's going to be the rookie of the year, he's got to catch a lot of footballs. And there have been receivers who have been rookie of the year. He's going to have a gigantic impact in an offense that likes to run the football. But you know what? We've been talking offensive guys. You've left me the board wide open on the defensive side of the ball. Those awards count the same, offensive and defensive. We've got last year's defensive rookie of the year coming up in Joey Bosa in about an hour. I like what Charles Harris can do in Miami. When you consider Ndamukong Suh and Cameron Wake on that line, a defense that continues to be improving, an offense that is better than people realize, Charles Harris can come in and have a huge impact. Round three to you, Brian Westbrook.
I was originally going to go offense with Deshaun Watson here, but once you said something about defense, this just reminded me of my guy out there in San Francisco, Reuben Foster, a guy that can be an impactful player. Once he gets to the ball, he's going to tackle with some suddenness. He's a guy that can go out there and help this defense right away. You add Solomon Thomas up there in the front that can play outside or inside. Then you throw in Navarro Bowman, who's going to come off of injury. Now you have a pair of linebackers right there in the middle that both can run sideline to sideline. They can be impactful. They can catch the football. They're going to hurt somebody out there in San Francisco. John Lynch is just doing a great job of building a defense, similar to what he had down there in Tampa Bay when he played. But Reuben Foster is a guy that can be very impactful on the defensive side of the ball. So he'll be a candidate for Rookie of the Year.
And my concern is, will the impact translate to statistics, the kinds of things that attract the attention of the voters? Reuben Foster can have a tremendous impact on that defense, but when you look at the stat sheet at the end of the game, you may say, where was Reuben Foster? Well, he was out there creating opportunities for other guys.
Big hits, though,
Mike. That could hold him back. So, round four, the later rounds of this draft, Brian Westbrook, you continue to control the clock. Who do you have?
Well, I started with the running back. I think it's appropriate that we get back to the running backs here, Mike. I have to go with Christian McCaffrey. We talked earlier about Cam Newton and his supporting cast. How do you take pressure off your quarterback? You get him a good tight end. They have Greg Olsen. And you also have to protect him. I think they still need some work there. But you have to have a good running back. Christian McCaffrey is a guy that can do it all. He can receive the ball out of the backfield. You can line him up in slot. He can run routes out of the backfield. He can run the ball on the outside and the inside. He's a guy that at Stanford was one of the more productive guys ever to play in the college football ranks. And so I think he's going to do nothing but help this football team. He will be splitting time with Jonathan Stewart. But at the same time, he's going to get a lot of opportunities. He has the ability and skill set to help Cam Newton. I think he'll be an impact player, definitely a Rookie of the Year candidate.
Now, see, here's one of the guiding principles I have with Rookie of the Year. You have to be a guy who gets the ball in your hands a lot. And with it's Leonard Fournette, I think Fournette's going to get the ball a lot in Jacksonville. Deontay Foreman, I think he's got a chance to get the ball a lot if Lamar Miller can't get it done at the level the Texans expect. With McCaffrey, I'm just concerned he's not going to see the ball as much as we think because of Jonathan Stewart, because of the receivers they have, because of Greg Olsen, because of Cam Newton. I think McCaffrey can be very good. I just don't know that he's going to have the impact necessary to win Rookie of the Year. So I think that, look, they made a great choice, and if you take the guy top 10, you better plan to use him. I'm just not sure McCaffrey comes into his own right out of the gates.
They need somebody to help Cam, Mike. That's the biggest thing. They understand that Cam can't carry this team by itself. Stewart's been there. His health may be an issue. He's been there before. They need a guy that's explosive like McCaffrey that can be that playmaker inside and outside of the backfield. He's going to help this offense. Once they see how much he's going to help this offense, he will be in the football game.
Okay, I'm going to stay in that same division. And, you know, no tight end has ever won the Rookie of the Year award in the NFL. But there's a first time for everything. O.J. Howard slid to 19. The Buccaneers pounced. And when you look at the weapons that they have in the passing game with Mike Evans, who's going to be double covered, with DeSean Jackson, who's potentially going to be double covered or not, O.J. Howard is potentially going to be running free down the middle of the field. He is a guy who, you know, who cares if he can block or not? He can run routes and catch passes, a tremendous athlete. And I think with Jameis Winston understanding he's going to throw the ball to the open guy, O.J. Howard could have a huge impact. I know they also have Cameron Brate, but O.J. Howard's one of those guys who could generate a ton of touchdowns, and that's the way to get the attention of the voters. You become that guy in the red zone that is open, that is getting the football, that becomes a 10, maybe 12 touchdown guy. If he does something like that, I could see him ending up getting some votes for Rookie of the Year. All right, round five, Brian, who do you have?
You know, Mike, I love that O.J. Howard pick. He was going to be my next guy off the board. DeSean Jackson, Mike Evans can stretch the field. O.J. Howard helps that team. Quarterback, safety net, and that tight end. Great pick there. I just believe we talk about getting guys available in the red zone. You're talking about catching voters' attention. That's by scoring touchdowns. You have to look at Mike Williams. He's going to go to a situation where, Phillip Rivers wants to throw that jump ball in the end zone. He wants to lob the ball up. You have a bigger receiver, strong hands that can go up and catch the ball, a contested catch. That's what he's all about. Phillip Rivers does that an awful lot. You've seen that over the years with Vincent Jackson, even with Antonio Gates. And so at this point, Mike Williams is going into a great situation because Phillip Rivers throws his types of balls, his types of routes. Those touchdown passes, those fade throws, those red zone targets will become huge for Mike Williams as he makes a run for the Rookie of the Year.
Wade Phillips joins us next right here on PFT Live. Welcome back to PFT Live on NBC Sports Radio and NBCSN. Joining us now, the author of the book I'm holding in my hand. It's called Son of Bum. It is available everywhere, and you can get it in time for Father's Day, and you should. He is Rams defensive coordinator and Super Bowl 50 champion with the Denver Broncos, Wade Phillips. Coach, welcome back to the program. How are you?
I'm doing great, Mike. Thanks.
Well, and thank you for writing Son of Bum. It's always great to read about good father and son stories. And you learned so much from your dad, Bum Phillips, the coach of the Oilers and the Saints back in the day. What's the one thing that you learned from him when you were young that still resonates with you now?
Wow, I don't know if there was one thing. I mean, I kind of go through it in the book. You know, he was my high school coach besides being my dad. He was my college coach besides being my dad. And then I coached for him or with him for 10 years. So, all of those things, I think, kind of molded how my life and especially my life in football. But I think, I think overall just treating people the way you'd like to be treated yourself, I think is probably the biggest lesson I learned from him overall.
One thing, Wade, that I picked up about your coaching philosophy is to keep things as simple as possible. Don't overcoach, if anything, undercoach. Trust guys to go out and do what they're supposed to do. Why do so many coaches seem to overcomplicate the process of getting players ready to go?
Yeah, I'm not sure on that. I'm pretty simple myself, so I think you coach the way sometimes you were coached. I think that's part of coaching. Sometimes coaches try to emulate people they're not. The game is complicated. I mean, I guess I learned better by simplifying things and knowing what to do and how to do those things and try to teach it the same way.
There are a lot of great stories in the book from your coaching career. Which one felt the best to get off your chest?
I don't know that any of them are off my chest. It's just I wanted to say things about my dad that, a lot of people, or some people had heard of him, the younger generation certainly hasn't, and I wanted to get that over to younger people, a father and son situation like that that meant so much to me. I hope that helps some people.
He's Rams defensive coordinator Wade Phillips with us here on PFT Live. You got a young head coach in Sean McVay. He's an offensive guru. You've got your defense that is now being installed with the Rams. They come from Greg Williams 4-3. They've got the Wade Phillips 3-4. What's the biggest adjustment that those players are going to have to make for your defense?
Hopefully it's not too big. I mean, in Denver, we went from Del Rio's 4-3 to a 3-4. So, and I've done it before at different places. So, hopefully it's usually not a big transition. I saw where Joey Bosa said there was no difference in the 3-4 and the 4-3, and there is a little bit of difference, but not a whole lot. So I think it's just putting them in position to make plays wherever they line up.
Well, that's one thing I noticed when you arrived in Denver. You wrote that Malik Jackson wasn't being used as much as you thought he should be used, so he became a star in your system because you used him all the time. And Von Miller, you moved him from the strong side to the weak side, and it really unleashed him as a pass rusher. Who are some guys with the Rams that may benefit from the tinkering that you're going to do when you realize that you can be putting these guys in better position than maybe they've been in?
Well, I mean, again, it's not – it's a different coach and a different system. So I think we'll be able to help a lot of guys that we have play better, but some of it's just fundamentals. Greg Williams is a great coach and he did a great job here, but we try to improve every year wherever we are. So we think we can do that with the players we have. Obviously Aaron Donald is a premier player. We think Quinn is going to come back and been an outstanding rusher for us. We got Connor Baldwin. We got Brockers. We got our inside backers are really good players. And I think our secondary is stronger than what people imagine. So I think we'll be all right here.
The team made the decision to use the franchise tag for a second straight year on cornerback Tremaine Johnson. How instrumental were you in advocating for the Rams to ensure that he's still part of the team?
They ask for coaches' opinion, certainly, and we give them. But it's not ultimately up to me anyway. So I gave my opinion, and I think he's a good player, and I think he can help us. So I'm glad we decided to keep him.
That's one thing that I also noticed in Son of Bum, the notion that coaches can add a lot by way of opinions, personnel evaluation, and that in some organizations maybe they don't get relied upon as much as they should. Over the years, have you gotten to the point where, if you ever had that opportunity, you could be a general manager and go out and pick all the players if it ever came down to it?
I don't know. I remember the good ones I helped pick, but probably all the bad ones I don't remember. So, it's a different area. I mean, I think with experience, you learn players coming out and kind of what they're going to do if you watch them throughout. I don't know. Some coaches, you know, some coaches are good at evaluating college players, and some aren't. You know, so I'm not sure where I am in there. I might be in between.
What was your dad's line, that you don't want a player who never does what he's told, and you don't want a player who always does what he's told?
Yeah, that's you want a player that, if he doesn't do anything, you tell him, well, then, you know, you can't play with him. But if he does exactly what you say and doesn't have his own initiative, I think that's what he was talking about. And that's true in a lot of cases. You don't want a guy just a robot player. You want a guy that goes out and plays. And when he sees something, he can go do it rather than being locked in a different way. So I think he was right about that.
You faced some great quarterbacks in your time. You've got a young quarterback the organization feels highly about in Jared Goff. How can a great defense help a Jared Goff get to his full potential, whatever it may be, working in practice against your defense?
Well, I think if you have a good defense, it helps your offense, I think, both ways, unless you just dominate them in practice. You know, we used to do that at Philadelphia. When I was with Buddy Ryan, we dominated the offense so much it was hard for them to do anything in practice or in the games. I think that hurt us some. But most places I've been with a good defense, it helps your offense know how to play against good players.
What have you seen from Jared Goff so far that's caused you to think, hey, you know what, this guy could end up being pretty special?
Yeah, he looks like an NFL quarterback to me. I mean, you know, it's I know he had a rough, you know, seven games or whatever it was last year, but in practice, and this obviously just practice and early, but he can throw the ball well. He's accurate, and he's thrown very few interceptions or balls that could be intercepted. So I've noticed that for sure.
Who was the toughest quarterback, Wade, for you to game plan against?
Well, I can go through I played against all of them except Bob Waterfield. So, you just go through the gamut of all of the great ones. Tom Brady obviously is up there. Peyton Manning's obviously up there. John Elway was up there. I mean, you know, it's just on and on with all the great ones. Terry Bradshaw was unbelievably good. So, and Marino. We beat Marino in the playoffs one time at Buffalo, but he threw it 64 times in a game. And, you talk about a defensive coordinator sweating when Dan Marino's throwing it 64 times. I mean, it was cold out, and I was sweating because, he's just such a great player. So and there's just been so many great ones I played against.
We look forward to seeing what you can do with that Rams defense this year, and as always, appreciate some of your time. Good luck with the book sales, and we encourage everyone to check out Son of Bum, available wherever books are sold. Wade, thanks for some of your time.
All right. Thank you, Mike. As always, you do a great job. Thanks.
There he is, Wade Phillips, the Rams defensive coordinator. Great stuff from him. And again, check out Son of Bum. Okay, quick break. When we return, Chris Sims in studio with Jeremy Macklin coming up. More PFT Live right after this.
You know, he was my high school coach. Besides being my dad, he was my college coach besides being my dad, and then I coached for him or with him for 10 years. So, all of those things, I think, kind of molded my life and especially my life in football.
That was Wade Phillips on PFT Live earlier this week, author of Son of Bum, Son of Bum Phillips. And with Father's Day approaching and with half of a father-son NFL combination, or actually, I guess I would say one-third, since your brother Matt is still playing for the Atlanta Falcons. Chris Sims in studio today. We decided to do a draft of the best father-son combinations of all time in the National Football League. The coin toss was handled off camera, and as usual, I've lost it. First pick in round one goes to Chris Sims. Who do you take?
Oh, with the first pick of the father-son draft, I am going Archie, Peyton, and Eli Manning. I mean, it's NFL hierarchy right there, NFL royalty. I just look at it and go, Peyton Manning, arguably the greatest quarterback of all time. Eli's 1-2, and Archie so much better than people will ever know or realize because he was on those horrible Saints team. That was an easy first pick for me.
You really, I tell you what, I think about this from time to time. How would Archie have fared if he had talent around him? And I've said in the past that Andrew Luck, son of Oliver Luck, who played in the NFL,
yep.
Where is he on the Manning scale? Is he closer to Archie or Peyton? And I think you make the strong argument that he's far closer to Archie right now with the lack of talent around him
yeah.
than what Peyton had when he was in Indianapolis. But it's hard to go wrong with the Mannings, with Archie, Peyton, and Eli. Four Super Bowl rings among them. Of course, none for Archie, but the Suns have two each. All right, I am going to go with true NFL royalty, Chris, the Rooneys. And I don't know which Art to include. I'm going to go with the original Art and Dan as opposed to Dan and the current Art, because the current Art hasn't had to do it on his own yet. The original Art and Dan got it done together. And when Dan got involved with the management of that team, very quietly, very discreetly, turned that team around from the late 60s and really up until today. And Dan passing back in the month of April, the Steelers, the gold standard, the platinum standard, really, in the NFL for the last half century, and no reason to think they won't continue to be contenders year in and year out. So both in the Hall of Fame, Art and Dan Rooney, my choice as the best father-son combination in NFL history.
Yeah, that's a really good pick. I thought about, they were the only ones that I thought about challenging the Mannings for that first pick. All the things they've done, whether it's the Steelers, the Rooney Rule, you made a lot of great points. But yeah, I mean, they're so a part of the NFL history and what it's all about and what it stands for to a T. It's one of the best organizations of football, and of course that is because of the Rooneys.
They've been so good for the last 50 years that everyone has forgotten how bad they were for their first 40 years, but they were dreadful in a league that had a fraction of the teams that it has today. They were never competitive. It all changed, though, in the early 1970s, due in large part to Dan getting involved and working directly with his dad. All right, on to round two, Chris Sims. Who do you have?
Oh, man, this is a tough one. You know, I think... I'm going to go with Bum and Wade Phillips, I think, as my second round pick. I mean, Bum Phillips, of course, a much better head coach than I think he ever gets credit for. Brought some of those Oilers teams in the 70s to AFC championship games, and they had to deal with the Steelers, so that was never easy playing them and dealing with them in the AFC. But Wade Phillips, again, I think a guy that's, you know, never going to get the credit he deserves for being the great coach that he is. Yeah, he might have not been the best head coach we've ever seen, but he's one of the best defensive coordinators we've ever seen, and he's done some pretty epic things here as of late, whether it was with the Houston Texans and what they did there as a head coach in his defense. They were pretty impressive, but especially what he did in Denver with that group there. I mean, that was maybe one of the greatest defenses we've ever seen in a single season in the history of football, that defense that beat Cam Newton and the Carolina Panthers. So I'm going to go with them as my number two pick.
One of the things that fascinates me about Wade Phillips in L.A. with the Rams, and we asked him about this when he was on the show, and he was very circumspect because I don't think he wants to tip his hand. But in his book, he points out that when he went to Denver, he looked at what they were doing defensively, and he saw two glaring things. First, they weren't using Malik Jackson nearly enough. They turned him into a superstar, and he got a gigantic contract. And secondly, they had Von Miller on the strong side instead of the weak side. And he looked at it and said, what the hell are you doing? You put him on the weak side, he becomes a sack machine, and he did. So who are the guys with the Rams? That's a real question. Because it's easy to say Aaron Donald. Who's the guy that he's going to take and move into a different position or use more than he's been used, and that guy becomes a superstar in that Rams defense? But a very keen, common-sense approach.
Yes.
Find that simple answer, and it'll seem obvious in hindsight, but we'll see what he can do there. All right, I am going to go primarily for the entertainment value, but also a little nostalgia. We talked earlier in the program about Buddy Ryan and the way he was, but between Buddy and the Ryan twins that he spawned, not a lot of Super Bowl rings to go around, but definitely a lot of entertainment and a lot of that bravado that we're missing in today's NFL. And I will miss having Rex Ryan on a sideline. I'll miss seeing Rob Ryan and hearing from Rob Ryan, and who knows when they'll be back, if ever. But between Buddy, Rex, and Rob, a great combination in the NFL.
Yeah, they are. They're great personalities, and too often, I think, in the NFL, we only give credit to great head coaches. Yeah, they might not have all been the greatest head coaches we've ever seen as far as the Ryan family, Rex, and Buddy, but they certainly are some of the best coordinators we've ever seen on the defensive side of the ball. I mean, innovative as far as what Buddy did in the 46 defense. I mean, he started that, the 85 Bears. And you're right. I mean, Rex, the personality, Rob, the personality. And Rex has been extremely cutting-edge defense as well, really to as of late, where he's gotten a little more status quo. But, yeah, they are. I'm with you there. They're a lot more, I think, underrated in the public eye than people realize how influential they've been on this league.
There was a feeling in the NFL right up until Rex Ryan got the head coaching job with the Jets that neither Rex nor Rob would ever be NFL head coaches because of the fear that they'd be too much like Buddy. But think back to 10 years ago. You never heard a word from Rex Ryan. Rex Ryan knew that he had to create the impression he wasn't going to be another Buddy Ryan to get a head coaching job. And then, of course, he got the head coaching job and he became another Buddy Ryan. We'll move on to round three. Who do you have in the final round of the father-son draft?
Oh, gosh. You know, there's a lot more important names here, but my selfish ego is going to go with the only other family to have two sons and a father throw NFL touchdown passes in a game, and that would be the Sims family. I'm so disturbed that you did not have me on this original list, so I decided to interject myself. I just can't believe you didn't have all the Super Bowl rings the Sims family has, all two of them that my dad won. Yeah, I'm throwing them in there. Yeah, that's what I am. But realistically, I wanted to kind of go like Mike and Kyle Shanahan. That was where I really wanted to go, but I decided to give myself a little pub.
Yeah, I'm surprised you didn't go with the Shanahans, because I know that you and Kyle are good friends.
We are.
And okay.
Realistic pick, but I decided to have fun and go with the Sims family.
Well, see, I was going to throw in Phil and Matt Sims and leave you off. My plan for the final pick in the round.
This day and age, I mean, hey, this is what it is. I walk around New York City and I'm either known as, aren't you Phil's son? Or they call me Matt more times. Hey, I really liked what you did with the Jets. And I go, that's my brother, Matt. I appreciate it. So I grew up with in the NFL, referees used to call me Phil during games, Mike. They literally would be like, hey, good throw there, Phil. And I'd be like, thanks, man. I appreciate that. I'm used to, you know, getting the shun there. No problem. I can handle it.
Well, I'll tell you what, I've got two options for this one. One is kind of fun and one is more serious. The serious one is the Winslows, Kellen and Kellen II. Though Kellen II never quite reached his potential in the NFL,
yep.
Kellen, Hall of Famer. And but for that motorcycle accident from back in 2005, I think it was a year after he was drafted by the Browns, that wrecked his knee and he fought through essentially having no cartilage of any kind in one of his knees, and he continued to play, and he still has that desire, even years after he's been out of it, to get back to the NFL. The two Winslows, I think, deserve to be on the list. I was tempted. The fun option is Ed and Sean Hockley, because I look forward to the day that Sean Hockley is wearing the extra small shirt and doing the officiating signals. But Ed, one of the more iconic officials of all time, his son is in the game as well. But Sean's not quite there yet. Winslows were there. Kellen II did enough to get on the list. All right, let's recap before we take our break.
I did a chest workout with Ed Hockley once when I was playing with the Titans. I couldn't hang with him, just as you would have expected.
I don't know how old the guy is, but he's shown no loss of mass at all over the years. I think he's at least mid-60s, if not pushing 70, and he's still going strong in the NFL.
He's jacked, man. He really is.
All right, so Chris's picks, he has the Manning trio, Archie, Peyton, and Eli. He has Bum and Wade Phillips. And we may want to include Wes Phillips in there at some point, too.
Right.
The next generation of Phillips, who Wade said on the program thinks is already ready to be an NFL head coach. And then the Simses, Phil, Chris, and Matt. I've got Art and Dan Rooney, Buddy Rex and Rob Ryan, and the Winslows, Kellen and Kellen II. That's our father-son draft. A little fun as Father's Day approaches.
We missed like the Matthews family, you know? That was the other one we probably missed, I thought of.
Yeah, and also the Longs.
Yes.
Yeah, oh. Howie, Chris, and Kyle, I think they could physically hurt us.
Yeah,
so we probably should. At least we're mentioning them.
You're right. That was stupid. I should take the Sims family off there and put the Longs on there all the way. They are way better than the Sims family. That's not even close.
Well, they have as many Super Bowl rings, though, I think, don't they?
They do now. You're right.
Oh, no.
Howie got
Kyle
one.
Howie has at least one.
Yeah, Howie just got one, I believe, when they beat the Redskins his rookie year. And then, just this year with Chris Long and the New England Patriots. So they got two now.
All right. Well, we'll let you revise your list. It's not a binding list, so we can put the longs on there if you choose to do so. And when we return, Ravens receiver Jeremy Maclin next, right here on PFT Live. Welcome back to PFT Live on NBC Sports Radio, NBCSN. Joining us now, one of the newest members of the Baltimore Ravens, 2009 first-round pick of the Philadelphia Eagles, and then by way of Kansas City, now in Baltimore, he's receiver Jeremy Maclin. Jeremy, welcome to the program. How are you, buddy?
I'm good, man. How you doing?
Good. It's great seeing you in the Ravens gear, and it makes me wonder, what do you do with all your Chiefs leftover gear now that you're not with them?
I still got people in St. Louis, man, where I'm from, that still enjoy the Chiefs, so I'm going to probably give that to a bunch of those guys. I always like to keep some stuff from some of the teams that I play for. So I got some Philly stuff. Now I got some Chiefs stuff too. So
what's your most treasured possession, piece of memorabilia from your sports career?
Probably my first touchdown ball. I think that, you know, you always got a dream of playing in the National Football League, but, until you actually get there, until you actually start, you know, putting your stamp on things, you know, then you really start to believe it. And I feel like my first touchdown was the time that I knew, okay, I belong here, and now it's time to take flight.
Who did you beat to score your first touchdown?
You know what? I'm not really sure. I can't remember. I know it was against Tampa Bay. It was down the left sideline, our sideline in Philadelphia, on a double move. And it was a nice ball by McNabb and a good catch by myself, so.
You play with several different quarterbacks over the years. You're getting accustomed now to a new one in Baltimore. Your initial impressions, and I know it's been a short period of time, but working with Joe Flacco, what have you seen?
I think for starters, he throws a beautiful ball. He can definitely sling it, big time arm, and knows when to put some zip on it. Knows when to, you know, put some touch on it. And then above all, he's just a real real laid back cool dude, man, that you can approach, you can talk to. Him and I were just having a conversation on the field just a second ago, just about kind of what he was seeing, what I was seeing. And then that went on to where you're going this offseason and vice versa. So he's just a real laid back dude, but a guy who can definitely, when you talk about measurables and intangibles, he has them all. So.
Any plans to get together with him and any of the other pass catchers during this dead period coming up to continue to work on chemistry, et cetera?
I think we'll kind of go, kind of just go with the flow. I think first and foremost, me and my wife, we got to find a place to live. So that's what we're looking for. But I think after I get that, I'll get here, I'll work out, and just kind of get accustomed to how they do things from a strength and conditioning standpoint. And then just get used to the city. I know Baltimore is a great city. My wife grew up here for like the first 19 years of her life. So just kind of get back used to the city and just kind of see what's out there.
And I want to take you back to two Fridays ago. I know exactly where I was sitting when I got the notice that the Chiefs had made the move. It shocked me. Scale of 1 to 10, how big of a surprise was it for you?
11.
How did you find out?
Through a voicemail.
From who?
John Dorsey.
And what was your reaction when you found out via voicemail?
I was upset. You know, I was shocked. You know, apparently they had been trying to trade me for 2 or 3 months, which, you know, who knows if that's true or not. You know, I would just think that, you know, and they're not entitled to tell me anything, but a guy who, you know, is going into his ninth year would know if he's being shopped or not. But it is what it is. You know, I still have respect for Big Red, still have respect for the organization. I'm not going to badmouth anybody or talk any dirt on anybody. You know, it was an unfortunate situation. They felt like, you know, they didn't want me as a player anymore. So, you know, it is what it is. You know, I'm happy with where I am right now. And I think that might be the last time I talk about what I like to call my former life. So I don't think I want to talk about that anymore.
Well, and just so we're clear, and this is a little bit related to it, they could have come to you, I assume, and said, hey, Jeremy, we're looking at your salary, we're looking at your production, we're looking at your age, we'd like to work something out that you can stay here for a number that makes more sense to us from a cash and cap standpoint. I take it from what you've said that never happened. There was never a discussion along those lines at all?
There was not a discussion with me or my team. I've heard a lot of rumors coming out of there. I've heard, you know, they thought I lost a step. My price tag was too high. Whatever the case may be, you know, I'm ready to play some football. And, you know, that flame that burns inside of a competitor, that thing got a lot brighter. So,
do you think you've lost a step?
Nope.